Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. We heard the beginning of Brahma's prayers yesterday, and today I would like to, practically speaking, quickly go through some verses to hit one of the main verses in the Bhagavatam, really, but here in Brahma's prayers. In some senses, it really will define bhakti and how to live a life of bhakti. So we heard yesterday another main verse. We heard quite a few yesterday, actually, how Brahma looking at Krishna, this little boy, and yet unlimitedly powerful, saw him, understood him, realized him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was very, very, very beautiful. Does anyone remember any of the qualities that were mentioned? What was he doing in that verse? Does anyone remember? What did Brahma see? That's the proper way to describe it. Gunja berries. Yeah, I mean, as they would say in the United States, how cool is that? I mean, in your high school, does anyone wear gunja berry earrings? I mean, they're really behind the times. Thank you. Anyone else remember something characteristic of what Brahma saw?
His body,
and it was?
Like a monsoon cloud.
Like a monsoon cloud. Darkish and very, very, very effulgent. And very, very little, because he's only a little boy. Anyone remember anything else? Yes. Venus, specifically.
6 inches, he's taking his right.
Yes. Because he wears a yellow dhoti, tadit ambaraya, that is like lightning. So luminous and effulgent, because we can only compare Krishna's, those things connected with Krishna, with things of this world, because that's all we know. So we say it is like lightning and his complexion is like a monsoon cloud, but in fact, lightning is nothing compared to Krishna, the effulgence coming from Krishna's dhoti and tadidambaraya. It's like lightning, but it's completely transcendental, which means it's from a different realm. It's from that realm, the realm of Krishna. Sometimes it's said it's on the other side. The other side means it's on the other side of the threshold. Here is the material world and a holy place like Vrindavan and Mayapur. They are like threshold. That's the meaning of Tirtha, threshold. It is not quite on this side, but it's not quite on that side. So people very easily perceive there's something from on the other side when they go to Vrindavan. There's something there that doesn't, that isn't just not, it's just a different realm. And Mayapur also, although the flavor is somewhat different. So describing Krishna and wearing a flower garland, a beautiful flower garland from the flowers of the Vrindavan forest, because all the different plants and trees and birds and the rivers and the mountains, they are all conscious entities, because they're there because they wanted to serve Krishna. The grass is there because they thought when Krishna walks, there may be some rocks or pebbles, sila ankara, some sprouts. And, oh, let us protect Krishna. Lotus, soft, soft lotus feet. Krishna's body, it describes the nectar of devotion. Bhakti Samadhi Sindhu is so soft and delicate that even if a leaf falls from a tree onto Krishna's body, his body will turn a little reddish from the touch of the falling leaf. So there's some entity that wants, oh, let me protect Krishna's lotus feet. That's his nature. That's what he wants to do. So therefore he's just sort of lying there waiting for Krishna to come and place his lotus feet upon him. It's grass. So in this way the whole spiritual world is full of living beings who in different forms, and their forms of manifestations of a particular individual way that they desire to serve. Here in this world, our forms of manifestations of our desire to enjoy. There, they're manifestations of our desire to serve. And that's who we actually are. When we ourselves manifest ourselves fully, this is what we end up with in one relationship or another with Krishna of service. So after that, Brahma was saying that it's how you're so powerful and there's no way that you can be understood, practically speaking, because there's so much difference between, I'll just get an exact be able to say it exactly. No one can estimate how powerful you are. Because like Prabhupada would tell the story of the frog in the well. Does anyone not know the story of the frog in the well? The ocean is how much bigger than my well? Is it four times? No, you don't understand. It's really big. You mean it's six times bigger than my well? No, you really don't understand. It's huge. You mean it's 10 times bigger than my well? 20 times bigger than my well? I think you're going to have to go and look at it for yourself, and then perhaps you'll understand something about what it means to be the ocean. So no one can understand, and Brahma's saying he himself, with practically speaking empowered intelligence, he can't understand the potency of Krishna's body, what to speak of the depth, what's really going on in his pastimes and who he's dealing with in his pastimes, what to speak of the happiness Krishna's experienced as he plays, interchanges with these, with the cowherd boys, with the cows, with the trees, with the grass in Vrindavan, with the rivers, with the mothers, the fathers. It's all composed of a different realm. So how many times more wonderful is it than a soft, something of this world? Is it two times more wonderful? Is it three times more? You mean it? No, it's a different level of wonderful. What goes on? You mean it's five times more wonderful? You mean it's 10 times more wonderful than the pleasures of this world? Well, it's a different realm. It's just a different realm that's unlimited. So Brahma's expressing his own inability to understand the nature of that realm, and he's there viewing it. But he can't really see it because he's on a different level of consciousness than the residents of Vrindavan. One has to have that consciousness to penetrate into what is really going on there. That consciousness means love for Krishna, as do the residents of Vrindavan. Kritta punja punja, it can take a long time. You know, birth after birth of performing sadhana and desiring, this is what I want. I don't want the things from this realm anymore. I want to taste the sweetness of this realm. So then Brahma explains another very famous verse, Jnane Prayasam Uruvastaramantaviva, that one has to give up the path of trying to enter in by one's own intelligence, by one's own power of intelligence, trying to really understand what it's like, what the Supreme Lord is like, what reality is like, by the power of one's intelligence, and instead adopt the path of bhakti, which means and begins with to stay where you are and hear about Krishna. Hear about Krishna from authorities who know about Krishna, and let that transcendental sound vibration and the transcendental concepts penetrate into your consciousness, and let it work in your consciousness. And then he explains that the devotional service is the best path, this path of bhakti. He's explained about hearing. And he says that if you give up bhakti to practice the path of jnana, or speculative knowledge, it means trying to put pieces together from the intellectual platform to understand. And he says that it's Lord Brahma compares that to beating husks of rice or wheat, that there's no more rice and wheat left in there because they've already been taken out. Did anyone ever husk? No. Everyone gets their rice and wheat from the supermarket. Has anyone ever seen it going on in India? Huh? Excuse me?
In the movies,
okay. I'm laughing, but I remember when I moved to Gidanagari farm, I can't remember how old I was, but it was in 1976, I think, so I was 30 years old almost. And I remember I got there in the end of the summer, and they were plowing up this particular field, and because the potatoes were ripe, and the potatoes came up, and there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of potatoes, and I was amazed because I didn't understand before that. I never saw where potatoes came from. I thought they came from plastic bags in the supermarket, being a city boy, and that explained to me, and then I said, oh, that's why they, sometimes when you used to buy them, there'd be some soil on them. Did that ever happen here too? So then I understood, oh, now it makes sense. Potatoes come from under the ground. And I was amazed that so many come. It was so bountiful. So this is also a lesson in agriculture, not only in philosophy, by the way. Yes, yes, potatoes come from the ground. And I didn't say tomatoes, because they also come from the ground, but they also, it's plants, tomato plants. Anyway, so we'll leave that for another day. So if one is beating the husks of the grain, husks, the plant, but after the grain is out, because that's the process, you take it and you beat it against something, and then it's also good for your health, and you don't have to go to the gym because you're already doing these wonderful things. It's a very balanced lifestyle. And but then and the grains are taken out, and sometimes what they do, I've seen nowadays, the lazy man's way to do it, they put the grains in the middle of the road and let the cars drive over them. And then every once in a while they just pull the stalks away and take a little broom and But all you get when you beat husks of grain where the grain has already been removed, all you achieve is a sore arm. You don't get any of the grain. So that's what Brahma says. So if you use your great intelligence to find out the absolute truth, your only gain, you will not find the absolute truth. You will not gain knowledge of Krishna, but you only gain trouble. That will be your only gain. That will be your result. You will not achieve self-realization. You will only gain trouble. And then there are three verses, 1, 5, 6, and 7, where he's rejected jnana. I'll go through these quickly because there's one verse, which is the verse I would like to speak about, although we can't speak much on it in time. But he said yogis. Now he's going to speak about yoga and how they get perfection. He's said that bhakti is going to give it to you, and now Brahma's going to make his comment on yoga before giving two comments more on jnana. So he says, Almighty Lord, in the past, many yogis in this world achieved the platform of perfection. They achieved devotional service by offering all their endeavors unto you and faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties. So that's part of yoga, actually. You don't give up your prescribed duties, your occupational duties, until you are very, very, very highly situated as a yoga practitioner. So they faithfully carry out their prescribed duties and they offer their endeavors to you. So I'm doing my duty. This is a yogi, someone practicing yoga, and they gain a good result. They gain devotional service by continuing their prescribed duties and offering the fruits of that work to you. Through such devotional service, so it's not going to be their yoga practices that give them the result, but through such devotional service, perfected by the process of hearing and chanting about you, again, the importance of hearing and chanting about you, they came to understand you. And he's looking at little Krishna standing before him, so beautiful. They came to understand you, O infallible one. And they could easily, once understanding Krishna, they could easily surrender to you, O Krishna, and then achieve your supreme abode. So the yogis, by taking to devotional service and their yoga becoming part of bhakti, with yoga being a secondary part of their practice, and then achieving the Lord within the heart, they surrender to him. They give themselves to him. I am yours. First they give the fruit of their work to him. Then they give themselves to him by continuing to hear about him. I am yours. I am yours. And then they attain the supreme abode. Because they don't think of themselves as independent enjoyers of this world. Rather, they think of themselves as Krishna's. Then two verses on jnana. non-devotees, this is the translation, however, cannot realize you in your personal feature. But it is not meaning that those who speculate, going back to the jnanis, does that mean they don't realize anything about Krishna? No. It may be possible for them to realize your expansion as Brahman, the impersonal supreme, by cultivating direct perception of the self within the heart. And this is the process. By trying to perceive, this is a very standard process that the jnanis perform, making that consciousness very, by being completely detached from all material activities, bringing that consciousness into goodness, then they can perceive, they can watch their mind moving and understand, this is not me, because they're watching it. What's watching the movement of the mind? It's not the mind watching itself, but there is, but you are watching it. So then you can distinguish between yourself and your mind. If your consciousness is subtle, then you can distinguish between, gradually between your intelligence and yourself. You can see that the intelligence is subtler than the mind. The mind is quite gross and clumsy and easy to observe, but the intelligence is more fine. And then if you become the most fine and refined perceiver, an introspective perceiver of the self, you can actually differentiate between the false ego and the person within that false ego, and identify with consciousness. Usually the impersonalists don't think that they have consciousness. They think that they are consciousness. Devotees don't think they are consciousness. They see consciousness as the symptom of themselves. A subtle but important difference. So these impersonalists, they can perceive this impersonal by direct perception, but this is still just an aspect of Krishna's greatness. But you have to be completely detached from all matter so that your consciousness is fine enough, subtle.